Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
It's one of the hardest topics to even talk about. We're talking about end-of-life planning. Maybe the acronyms confuse you. What's the difference between LPA, AMD, palliative care, end-of-life care? LPA stands for Lasting Power of Attorney. AMD, the Advanced Medical Care Directive. We're going to get through all those acronyms and touch on a topic that remains difficult. According to a study by SMU in December last year, some 5,186 Singaporeans surveyed, only 53% said they would plan for end-of-life matters, compared to 97% and 93% who would plan for happier occasions like marriage and birth. Their top end-of-life step, well, most people want to write a will, and then they think it's important to buy insurance, and only 4% want to even think about planning their own funeral. Similar to a study in 2018, the reason most cited against planning is that it's unnecessary at this point. Is it? We're going to put that question to Christopher Tan. This is a topic close to his heart. CEO of Provident. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, good morning, Michelle. It's good to talk to you again.
Always good to speak with you. Now, first of all, it is a broad umbrella term. So from your perspective, what is end-of-life planning?
Yeah, so end-of-life planning is actually, you know, putting in place a set of plans that you would want to be able to give clear instructions to your loved ones and maybe even your doctors, the healthcare professionals, on how you would really like to be cared for and how your properties, and I'm not just talking about residential or physical properties, real estate, I'm talking about general properties, your monies, your investments, your monies in your bank accounts, you know, and all that, how you want it to be managed. Should you be terminally ill, or should you be, unfortunately, mentally incapacitated? So that's really what end-of-life planning is all about.
And how different is this from estate planning?
Yeah, so it's often confused with estate planning, but they are really quite different, because estate planning is more a set of plans that we put in place on how we want our assets and liabilities to be managed, and also how our loved ones can be taken care of upon our death. Yeah, so estate planning is really about planning. I know it's quite morbid, but it's really planning about, you know, what happens to our assets and what happens to our loved ones after our death. Whereas end-of-life planning, they take care of things before our demise, when we are terminally ill or mentally incapacitated. And because of this confusion, I think a lot of people today, they do estate planning. I mean, you know, writing a will is no longer a taboo, right? You know, Michelle, I mean, back in maybe 10, 20 years ago, nobody wants to talk about will writing, but today it's no longer a taboo. Whereas end-of-life planning, I think, I mean, as you have read just now about the study, a lot of people don't really know this, or they don't really know the importance of doing this part. I feel that it is as important as estate planning.
Apparently, a lot more younger people are taking to things like advanced care planning and the LPA. And we'll talk about those specifically in just a while. But first up, why is this a topic close to your heart? Why is it important to think about end-of-life planning?
Yeah, I mean, it's really close to my heart, because I've got unfortunate experiences with relatives who have gone through that, my own father inclusive. I mean, well, just recently, a close relative of mine passed away just last month, and just before he, or rather 4 months before he passed away, he was suddenly diagnosed with end-stage lung cancer. You know, and but he opted for chemotherapy. He wanted to go. And so, unfortunately, after one session of chemotherapy, the side effects actually caused him to hallucinate, and then one night he just fell, and then he broke his hips, you know, a hip fracture. And then after that, the condition deteriorated, and after a while, he was severely disabled. He couldn't make any decisions about himself. Some days he was just in delusion, and the family actually brought him home. But you know, it was difficult, because when the family brought him home, there were a lot of decisions to make. And my this relative, you know, because he didn't do end-of-life planning, somebody in the family has to make that decision. But different people have different opinion on how he should be treated. I think that caused a lot of stress to the family and a lot of misunderstandings. And also, I don't know, you know, I mean, he has, of course, since passed away. I don't know. But I felt that if he had done some sort of end-of-life planning. Maybe those misunderstandings could have been avoided, and more importantly, maybe he didn't have to go through some of the more aggressive treatments that the family might have decided. You know, so I think it's something that is important. My own father had a good experience. I mean, he passed away 2 years ago, but he did ACP. And when he had his heart attack, we were very clear of his decision that he doesn't want to be resuscitated because that was his fifth heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And we let him go. That's what he wanted. And the family accepted it. My siblings, amongst ourselves, no quarrels, because we knew that was Dad's instruction.
Right.
It's a difficult subject to broach,
yeah,
but it's very important.
I'm very sorry for both of the losses. Thank you for sharing, Chris. But as you say, it's more than just money or property. It's also about sharing your healthcare wishes, how you want to be treated. And this can be an instrument of peace. It can bring peace to the family.
Right.
But there are questions you need to think through. Who do you trust, right, to manage your money or your property? Mm. Who is able to act in your best interests? These are some important questions. Let's talk about the instruments. What can we use for end-of-life planning?
The three main instruments you have brought up, you know, at the beginning of the show, Michelle, firstly is advanced care planning, ACP in short, and then, of course, LPA, lasting power of attorney. And the last one, which is, I think, the most least talked about, is AMD, Advanced Medical Directives. So these three are the usual instruments that we use. Not all are legal instruments, but they are good instruments to use for end-of-life planning.
Okay, so let's talk about that acronym, ACP, Advanced Care Planning. Who's it for? Do I have to be 21 to get it done? How much does it cost?
Right, so ACP is actually, as we have spoken a bit about earlier, it's the process of actually planning for one's current and future healthcare. It helps individual when you are well, you know, communicate to important people in your lives. I mean, most likely it'll be your family.
Mm.
And also the healthcare team, the doctors whom will be taking care of you if you fall sick, about your values, about what is important to you, about how these values actually shape your healthcare preferences. And in the event, you know, that individual is no longer able to make decisions or speak for themselves, the ACP document, because all this discussion will be contained and documented in this thing called ACP document, that guides the decision makers. And that those decision makers are not just your family members, but also the doctors, to act in your best healthcare interest. So that, as I mentioned, the healthcare received is tailored to your preferences and values. You can avoid all those unnecessary and overly aggressive medical treatments. Your family will experience a lot less stress, anxiety, avoid misunderstandings, and the healthcare team has a better understanding on the quality of life you expect and really act in your best interest. So that's really what ACP is about.
Okay. Can you explain the lasting power of attorney? This one important because it has to do with your mental capacity. And as you illustrated by sharing your personal experience, you're never going to know that moment when you're going to lose it. So it's hard to plan for that.
Right. Yeah. So just before I quickly talk about LPA, I forgot to mention one thing about ACP, Michelle. And that is, I mean, for those of us who are listening in and you feel that conviction and say, yes, I want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who do I go to? Right, where do I start? Right, I mean, there is a place or there is this provider called the ACP provider, and the directory can be found at AIC.sg. The website is called AIC.sg. You will be able to find ACP providers there to actually facilitate the conversation between yourself or your parents, for example, with the appointed spokesman. The ACP spokesman is the person that is going to speak on behalf of the person who will be sick, right? Most of the time it's free.
Yeah.
If there is any cost at all, it's just very little, about $50 or so. But most centers actually, they charge free. So if you're interested, go AIC.sg and you can find a list of providers that help you. Yeah, so sorry.
It's an excellent resource. So thank you for that. So that's where you can go and you can get someone to help you with that. And you can also get some ideas on financial assistance schemes as well,
that you can
tap on for your loved ones if they're seniors or bedbound or caregiver.
That's right. Yeah, I just thought it's good to tell people about this place because if you really want to do it, I mean, sometimes it's like, okay.
Yeah, how do I do it?
Where do I go?
Most people think this happens if I'm at the point when I'm diagnosed with serious illness.
Yes, no. Actually, the best time to do this is actually when you are healthy. And I just want to add, Michelle, to say this, that when you are discussing this whole ACP thing with your loved ones, something actually good will come out of it. It's not just about the healthcare preferences, but you know, when you or your parents share their important values, what is most important to them, actually, I find personally, at least between my father and me, I know a lot better what is most important for him. And while
what do you
he's
mean?
Still alive,
can you share an example?
I mean, it's like, you know, if you talk to the person and say, okay, because the conversation is not so straightforward and say, okay, you know, when you are very, very sick, how do you want to be treated? It's not so abrupt. It doesn't go straight to that point. There is an ACP workbook that you can actually download from the website, and you see all those questions there. They are very good questions. They are questions that are even useful when you are very well and alive, you know, and they are questions like, what are the most important values? What is important for you? What makes you happy? You know, that kind. And these questions, when we ask, allows us to finally land at some decisions and say, okay, when I'm no longer able to be well and I'm very sick, what are the most important kind of medical treatment I want? And maybe because the discussion was about, actually, my most important thing is to live an active life. And if no longer I can live an active life, then what's the point? Let me go, you know? So they ask questions that lead to you finally making a healthcare decision. But while discussing that, you understand this person a lot better about what is important for him, what, you know, and so while he's, after you file that document away, you just felt that that conversation helped you know this person a lot better. And I think it actually enhances the familial relationship between even parents and child, especially if you have got aged parents who are very traditional. They don't always share their life with you, but this process helps them share what is important for them with you.
That's a wonderful insight. Now, this site, AIC.sg, some people might think, my mother, you know, is not particularly literate. Will she have to fill out tons of forms in order to get this done? But it sounds like it's done by on the basis of a conversation.
Yes, it is. There are no forms. ACP is not a legal document. It is a process whereby it's just conversations, and the facilitator is there to actually help put it into the document. That document is filed, but it's not legal document. But it contains your mother's or your father's wishes. Yeah. So your parents don't have to sign anything, or they don't have to, you know, fill up forms. No. My father could only speak Malay and Chinese, you know. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he did it as well.
Wonderful. Thanks for that. Are you ready to move on to the LPA, Chris?
Yes, I am. So let me explain about LPA. So LPA, unlike ACP, is a legal document, right? And it is a legal document to help those who lack mental capacity by giving them the legal protection that they need when they are no longer able to make a decision about their private affairs, their personal welfare, and all that, right? So through the LPA process, it allows you to appoint a, quote-unquote, this person called a donee, or more than one donee, to make a decision for you if you lose mental capacity. So this person basically take over decisions such as where do you stay, how do you want to be cared for, you know, your bank account, if you need money, this person will help you withdraw, you know, and all those things. So the LPA document also put down the decisions on what the donee can do or cannot do. There are some restrictions that, I mean, the donee has power, but he's not that powerful that he can do everything. But the LPA put in place sort of the rules on what the donee can do and what they cannot do.
Okay. Apparently, more younger people are taking to planning with an LPA. A healthcare provider has seen an 8-fold jump in 1 year. And some say, you know, going through the COVID crisis and seeing what's happening to people and how quickly you can lose mental capacity for the future to make decisions is spurring more younger people to step forward. Now, why is it important to do it? And let's talk about the money question. How much does it cost to put an LPA together?
Yeah, I mean, when you are mentally unable to make decisions for yourself, I mean, there'll be things such as if you're hospitalized, somebody needs to sign their consent form. If you need to make some insurance claims, you can't sign it anymore because you are mentally incapable of doing it. So you need your donee to do all the claim forms. And managing of bank account money, I mean, you need a sort of like a letter of authority, you know, for the bank to allow you to take out some money. But if you are not there to take it out, somebody has to help you do it. Otherwise, you know, who is going to take care of your day-to-day living, right? I mean, if you are suffering from dementia or stroke, somebody has to do that. Somebody has to sign a check and all these things. So there are a lot of documents, you know, that needs to be signed. But if you are not able to do it, then you need to appoint that person, and that person is called donee. So that's why it's so important to do the LPA. Now, you will realize that there is a slight overlap between the LPA and the ACP, mm-hmm. right? Because the donee also takes care of the personal wealth care. It also takes care of the care preferences, and that includes healthcare preferences. Yeah, but the difference between the ACP and the LPA is the ACP is very narrow. It is a document that documents down your healthcare preferences, and that's it. It's not a legal document, right? But the LPA is broader. It doesn't just take care of the care side. It takes care of the property side of things.
Can you have two different decision makers, one in charge of your healthcare, another one in charge of your money?
You can. Yep. However, it will always be good if that's the same person, right? Because then there is no need to go and have this discussion. Of course, it would be great if your ACP spokesperson is also your donee. But yes, you don't have to. You can have a different donee. Maybe you think this donee is more professional, you know. But the spokesperson is one that really is your daughter that takes care of you. Things like, yes, but to answer that question, the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. And to answer that question on cost, it depends on which form. There are two forms that you can choose to fill, Form 1 or Form 2, up to you. Form 1, Michelle, is really easy. Okay. You can just download it from the website. It has got about 12 pages. I mean, I know 12 pages sounds like a lot, but the font size is really big. You know, there aren't a lot of things to fill up, actually. Yeah, so it's quite simple, Form 1. Form 1 for Singapore citizen right now, the application fee is waived up till 31st of March 2023.
And $75 waived.
Yes, it's originally $75, you're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's now waived until 31st of March 2023. Form 2, the difference between Form 2 and Form 1 is Form 2 has a lot more detail. You can actually customize the way you want to give your powers to the donee. Mm. The application fee is $200. That is, you have to pay. Okay, but that's just the application fee to be paid to the Office of Public Guardian. When you go to the lawyers, because you need to go to the lawyer or doctor to sign off that form, they are called the certificate issuer. The doctor and the lawyer may charge you a small fee if you are doing Form 1, maybe in the region of maybe $70 to, I've heard some doctors doing it as low as $70 or maybe $100. Yeah, if you do Form 1, Form 2 will be expensive because Form 2, you do need to go to a lawyer because he's going to customize that form for you.
It's about $200, right?
Okay, the application fee is $200, okay, but you have to pay the lawyer's fees. So there are two fees. One is you apply to the OPG,
okay,
right? But the other fee is when you take advice from a professional. Form 1, you don't really need to take advice. It's really simple.
So Form 2, the LPA Form 2, has to be drafted by a lawyer.
Yes, that's right.
So
that's
you
right.
still need to pay the Office of Public Guardian, but you also need to pay legal fees.
That's right. Depends on how much time you spend on lawyers. They can charge you between $500-$600, something like that.
Okay, got it. Yeah. I've been putting off doing my own LPA, I'll have to tell you that, but this is changing my mind. So we've also heard, you know, on TV shows, we see the do not resuscitate form, and it makes decisions for the end of life, really the end, to be called by you, the patient. In Singapore, it's called the Advanced Medical Directive. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, AMD is an instruction. It's an instruction to the doctors. When, you know, you are terminally ill, unconscious, incapable of making any more rational decision, and you tell the doctors, look, you know, I am actually dead, right, because I'm brain dead, so don't prolong my life using artificial means, such as an artificial respirator, because there's clearly no hope of finding a cure, right? And so, of course, there are some procedures that the hospital will use. I'm not exactly sure, but the medical practitioner, they will go through a discussion. I understand there need to be a few doctors who confirm each other's decision that this is really terminal and there is no hope of a cure. And if you have signed the AMD, they will pull off the plugs and they will let you go naturally. Yeah. Of course, if you don't, then your family members may say, and I have a friend who was like that, they put on the artificial respirator on the father, but actually the father is brain dead, and the minute they pull the respirator off, he will die. But they were hoping against all hope. But if you have signed an AMD, Nobody can do that. They will pull off the plug and that's it.
And AMDs are confidential. So you don't have to worry. You've signed the AMD and the doctor won't work as hard on you or the nurse won't work as hard on you. They don't know, right?
No. And AMD, you have to do it in the presence of a doctor. Yeah. So most people will go to their family GP, you know, and tell the GP they want to do it because the one of the witnesses needs to be a doctor. Right, a doctor will sign it. It's actually free. When you, after you have done it, you're supposed to file it with the registrar of AMD, which is with MOH. It's actually free. But of course, if you get a doctor to sign, your family doctor may charge you a small fee or, they may give it to you free.
So I can talk to my GP about it.
You can. But I do encourage, Michelle, that people talk to their family as well. Because although you can do this secretly, and like you mentioned, nobody will know it until you are down. But imagine this, you know, imagine that I'm down, you know, but my family really, really want me to go on. And then suddenly they are slapped with an AMD and they have to let me go. Not very nice. So I want to do it, I will tell my family, look, I've signed this, okay? So don't be upset because that's my decision.
Okay, I want to bust another myth because there are people thinking, you know, with technological advances, you never know, there could be a cure around the corner. And I signed my AMD in 1982 and then this cure came about in 2025. Can I revoke the AMD? You can.
Yes, you can. Yeah, I know it's a difficult decision to make the AMD, right? I mean, I've read recently on I think must be the Straits Times or somebody changing their mind just before, you know, they she actually didn't do it, but then they saved her, and she was actually really glad she didn't sign the AMD. So yes, after you have done it and you may regret it, you can always revoke it along the way if you so decide that that's a bad idea for you.
All right. Well, wonderful topic. Really important to get through. Before we let you go, you've been in this industry a long time, Chris. And you know, the main taboo is a lot of Asians think just talking about it, there's causation, will cause it. So what do you say to people who pantang don't want to think about AMD, end-of-life planning?
Yeah, think about your loved ones. I mean, we really want to leave this place, not messing it up for our people that we really, really love. You know, I have been in that shoe and I really appreciated my father doing that because it spared us of a lot of pain, you know, and, you know, the family relationship between my siblings and my family and me still remain intact after he's gone. So think about your loved ones. You are really doing them a favor. Okay, so do it while you still can do it.
Thank you, Chris. Christopher Tan is CEO of Provident. This is Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.